Okay, today, gentlemen, we must finish. We're not leaving.
And we can't finish until we start.
Okay, we have to go. We have to start. Okay. Good evening, gentlemen. Continue the Rambam Hilchos. Geirushin, Perek Yud Gimel, Halacha Chaf Aleph, Chapter 13, Law 21, page 238, 239, the most nine texts. We have nine halachas to do today. Okay, now, we're trying to find out, can you be sure if the person you have identified is the dead person whom you're testifying it is? So we're going through a few halachas that will tell us, how do you determine identification? Those who learn Eilim Metzias with us, right, will spill over into this Gemara. Mitzoh Harugameis, let's say the witness finds that the guy is dead, killed or dead. So now, what parts can he identify? Im Padachto, if his forehead, V'chotma, and his nose, who parts of Panav, and the face, Kayama, if they're still intact, Vikiru, and he recognized Bahen Shu Ploni that it's so and so, then being able to know if they can testify him. That's gotta be enough of that. The rest of the body isn't so important, but the facial features are very important. Vimnita Lechameelu, but if one of them's been removed, brutally, Afvisheshlahem Simon Bagufa, because let's say there's other Simonim on his body, or the clothes he wore, Vafilu Shuma, even a wart. Ain't made him a love. You cannot testify on warts. Shema Acharu, maybe it's somebody else who has a similar wart. Now, Bemad, when do we say that the facial features are good enough? Bishiro, Bisoch, Shoshiyam, Acharigoso, Acharbisoso. When you saw him within 3 days of his death or murder. But after 3 days, the coroners can weigh in on this. Ain't me, you can't testify me if they should parts of fun of Mishtana because the face changes already.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
3 days when the facial features change. So you can't already recognize the same person. But do facial features change when people are submerged in water? So halacha chaf beis. Tava bayam, a person drowns in the ocean, v'yishlucha ayam liabasha, and then the ocean kicked him up to shore. So now we clearly know the guy's dead because he's been washed ashore, but it's been a few days since he fell overboard and he had his blue and yellow jacket, and that's the same blue and yellow, these red sneakers, the red sneakers are on him, everything's the same, the long flowing Goldilocks hair was there, and now the body's been kicked ashore a week later. Now you look at his face.
Yes.
So now, afilach akamim, even after many days, after he drowned, im hikiru upon of a chotim, if you can recognize his face and his nose, maybe nobody can testify. Alright, it's many days, it should have changed. The answer is, shehid mishtana b'mayim alachers manruba. When it's in water, the water preserves it, it will take a much, much longer for it to change for us to do that.
Salt water, maybe.
Okay.
He died at sea, so yeah.
Yeah, he died at sea. And that's what they said. The Gemara brings down a sori, a fellow drowned, well, even in the Jordan River, Gemara seems to say, which is not a salt water. After 17 days, they recognized him and they said he was okay. So I don't know, you can check it out. I'm not a scientist. The Gemara says any kind of water, not just salt water, they say this halacha. Now, what if he's been kicked ashore, and now it's been a while since he's been ashore? But once he's on the shore, even for 12 hours, and his body has become bloated from that, he cannot testify, because he has changed. However, if it wouldn't have been bloated, then we're not worried, because it could still be that maybe the water still saturated him, so it could still be relied on.
Now that's just facial features at this point.
Because the rest of the body isn't what you can testify on. We said you cannot testify on arms, legs, warts, clothes, nothing. So the only thing you have to go on is the face. Kishemistaklin vitsuraso, kidela hakiro hedolov. When you look at the guy's form, the shape, to recognize him, to be able to testify for him if he, when he died. Both, so you can check. You could see, identify the body at night if it's the light of a candle or the light of the moon. In other words, you don't have to only say that you only can check it in the daytime. Well, in the daytime you can recognize, but at night you can't recognize. No, at nighttime, you can recognize it at night with proper illumination, it also is sufficient. Okay, now we stretch it a little bit. Chav Gimel.
Why does the Rambam specifically say that, like that 12 hours? Like, first of all, how would anybody know the hours it was lying there?
I don't know.
I was a stopwatch.
You also don't remember.
Maybe you're on a boat far away and you see this body has been just cast ashore.
It
took you 12 hours to get there. I don't know how
there's a footnote here.
Birds start coming around.
It says here the.
I don't know. I don't know when you get to Altar. Let's not a situation where you had a watch and you knew and you didn't get to this body.
There's a footnote that just says if the corpse lies on dry land for hours, in other words, it's just you cannot wait a significant period of time. So he just I don't know how the 12 got put in there.
The Rambam says it, so he must have got it from somewhere. The Hagos Maimoni has a different text. He says many hours. Yeah. Magid Mishnah seems to says an hour.
Yeah.
And Shulchan Aruch says also, it doesn't say how long. Maybe it doesn't say how long either.
Perhaps because of the 12 hours, that's why they have to bring out candlelight and moonlight, because if you wait longer, it'll be past the 12 hours.
Maybe. That's a good point, too. Excellent. Okay, Chav Gimel. Let's say you see a guy at a distance. Let's say he's at the top of a mountain, you're at the bottom of a valley. And you see this guy, Va'amar, and he says, Shu ploni ben ploni. O ploni makam ploni. He says, I, Chaim Yankel ben Yitzchak. Or, it's me, Chaim Yankel from Muncie. Right? And he's up there. Hi, guys. Now, you really don't see him. You see a person, but it's at a distance. You don't have a telescope. You hear the guy saying his name. So it's Chaim Yankel of Muncie. Fine. Now, and then what happens? All at a distance. Right? And then as he's talking from a distance, a snake bites him and he dies.
Oh, no.
So now, you now go to find the guy. Now you see the guy was far away. And let's even say more than that. You did recognize his face. I'm sorry, you did recognize his face. But you don't know the guy. In other words, guys you know, you see every day. Then there's a guy you meet for the first time. And he says, I'm Chaim Yankel from Muncie, nice to know you, right? And now, and then a snake bites him, and now you run over to the guy. By the time they get to him, his face changed already. And they don't recognize him. But it's the same guy. I don't know. Hare Elu Masin's Ishto, their testimony can allow the guy to get married.
Not the guy, the woman.
The woman to get married.
He's gone.
Okay.
Maybe upstairs.
Now, and why? It says something about snake bites. When a snake bites you, that can change the person's face very fast. So here's an excuse. So therefore, in other words, here's there's two issues here. A guy says, I'm Chaim Yankel for months, right? You don't know Chaim Yankel for months. He just introduced himself to you. Now, what's the chiddush of the Rambam is, maybe he's lying to you. How do you know he's Chaim Yankel from Muncie? He didn't have wallets in those days with driver's license as Chaim Yankel from Muncie. Guy's in Chaim Yankel from Muncie. So maybe the guy was lying. So Rambam said, we don't assume the person was lying, and rather, because maybe it's not Chaim Yankel, and we assume that the poison changed his features to change. So therefore, you knew who the guy was. It's the same guy, but he looks different than the guy was a few hours before when
he kept your eye on him the whole time from far away to when you
got whatever. So by the time you get to him, so we assume it's the same guy, even though he looks different. And we associate the change with the snake bite. Chavdal. Okay. Now there's an interesting case. A guy just walks into town. And he walks in and there's a woman here. Amrlo, he says to everybody in town, I want you to know, I was just in another city, and in the other city, they asked me if I was coming to this town. I said, I'm coming to this town. So he said, give the following message to this town. Amrli, based in Anushin, a Bezdin in the other town, or people in the other town, they gave me a job. When you get to the city that I have just arrived to, and Morlam, tell them, Shemesh Yitzchak ben Michael. Yitzchak, the son of Michael, died, who's from that town. So I'm just coming and telling you what they told me to say. The best one this guy told me to say. I just want you to know, there must be somebody in this town named what? Yitzchak ben Michael. And he's dead. The Shliach tells us this. And he said, well, do you know who Yitzchak ben Michael is? I don't know who he is. But I just know what the best one told me. That this guy, and they know he's from this city. So v'hol v'ani yodim ploni du b'shem says. So if in this city there was a Yitzchak ben Michael who happens to not be in town, that's interesting. Last month Yitzchak ben Michael Schwartz, he went away out of town and his wife was expecting ready a week ago.
No.
He hasn't come back. Then Hare Ishto Muteris, his wife is allowed to remarry. Ve'nomer, we don't say Shem Yitzchak ben Michael acher hushmeis. Maybe it's a different Yitzchak ben Michael. However, the commentaries tell us because that was speaking where in this city is only one Yitzchak ben Michael who's not in town. But if two Yitzchak ben Michaels left town, then we'd have a problem. We could not accept it. So again, this is sort of circumstantial evidence, but not because it's clearly a Bezdin says tell him that Yitzchak ben Michael died. And we know there was a Yitzchak Michal who left the city. We have, it's enough information. Now, of course, maybe it's another Yitzchak, but there's only one Yitzchak Michal in the city.
But are we seeking proof that the Beis Din actually told him to say this?
We assume he's telling the truth. Remember, we'll believe one witness for these kinds of cases.
Yeah,
we assume the guy's telling the truth. That's the assumption. In all these cases,
he can even do it if he can do it from here.
He himself could say Yitzchak Michal died.
Yeah. Right. So why?
And he could say, I heard it from somebody. Right? He said, that's okay. So certainly from a Beis Din.
Okay. Yeah.
Her say is accepted.
Why make the case that he heard it from a Beis Din to say he can't?
What? I don't know. You're right. He didn't have to. I don't know.
It seems like it's making it stronger, but it's not.
No. He said, oh, I know. She more appeal. Doesn't have to be. Either way. Maybe more likely to be a Beis Din.
Yeah.
But either way, what's the main chiddush here? He himself doesn't know the guy
who
he's testifying about. Mm-hmm. But he's saying there's certainly somebody who did know Yitzchak Ben Michal from the city. And if we assume, and if there's only one Yitzchak Ben Michal, and he's not around, we assume that that's
just
the fellow.
Just a messenger.
Chafei. Yatso goyvi Yisrael, meimanu makom acher, a Jew and a non-Jew on a camping trip. Uba ha-goy, and then the boy comes back a few weeks later. Ve'isich l'vitum, it just happens to say, Yomer says, ishi yatso imi mikon meis, the man who went with me a few weeks ago, interesting story, I went with this guy, and he died. So now the truth is this goy does not really know who this Jewish man is, just knows his man. Masina Siso, his wife get married based on the goy's revealing the information. Even though this goy does not know the name of the Jew, he doesn't know his name. He just says, I went a few weeks ago with a Jew, and people know who went. We know who went. We know the Jew went with the goy.
Okay.
And now the goy, the same goy comes and says, I went with the Jew, I don't know who his name was, but he's dead. So it's acceptable, but however, only Ushomer Yasei Kabartiv, I have buried him. Because since he's not saying his name, it's not enough. Because really, you have to have a little bit more information than just saying, the guy who went with me died. That's not enough. Because maybe, he's just guesstimating, whatever. But if he really knows his name, it's much more stronger certainty. So if he doesn't have the name, it's lacking a bit of certainty. So we need to make it up by saying, and I buried him. And that gives us enough certainty for that case. Let's say there were 10 people together going from one place to another. However, a little bit more. They're all shackled in chains. Oh, no single, or they're leading donkeys. They're tied to donkeys and they're leading them as prisoners of war or any kinds of prisoners do. Or any similar type of situation. Obviously, these guys are in serious trouble. They've been captured. Things are not good for them. So we know that. Well, there was. And the non-Jew happens to come back and just happens to mention, there were 10 guys who went on one of these death marches, and they were carrying this and this, like chains or whatever, and they all died.
And
we buried them. So there's three things happening. He lists how many people there were, he says exactly how they were going, and from place to place, and they were chained and all that. Still, we still could be concerned that maybe only some of them, maybe some of them escaped, but he's saying I buried them.
All 10.
Then Masinus and Shem, then all 10 wives can get married because he's given us enough information. Lacking any one of those bits of information, he could have just said, I assume all 10 died, but maybe only 7 died, maybe 3 escaped. But if he says I buried 10 guys, well then that's enough information.
But in fact, if he said that 7 died and I buried 7.
Then we don't know. It's worse.
Nobody can get married.
Nobody can get married.
He doesn't even know who they are.
He doesn't know that, but we know the 10 guys.
Someone has to know. Otherwise,
we know the 10 guys.
Who can get married?
The Kazakhs came in and they captured 10 guys. And they went.
And people saw them go.
And yeah, the 10 ladies are crying. They took my, all the men of the city were taken. It's all 10 of them. They're small villages, right? 10 guys get taken off in chains. Now, a week later, Goy comes back, you won't believe it. He goes to the saloon, says, where's all the men in the city? Well, and they're all gone. Oh yeah, as a matter of fact, last week I saw 10 guys. They're all in chains and this and that, and they all got killed, and I buried them all. Well, then obviously we know who he's talking about, and they could marry your husbands based, new people based on that. Then it's no good at all.
Nobody can get married.
Because he doesn't know who's who, unless he can identify who is, but we don't know.
Somebody had a
leaf. Okay, Chav Zayin.
Just a quick question.
Yes, sir.
Why do we trust the goy In this instance, and we don't trust them in other instances.
We don't usually trust a goy in testimony.
Yes.
We're lenient in cases of aguna, that if they just mention it, and not as a testimony, but just in passing, that's a leniency that we have. The Rambam will give a fuller explanation, halacha chavtes, for all these leniencies. Okay, but that's the general rule. We're lenient. We normally don't believe them. Chav Zayin, Yisrael Shemar Jew comes along and says, Mace ish Yehudi imani b'makom ploni. A certain Jew, okay, a Jew was with us in a certain place. Kach v'kach tzuros, this is what he looks like. V'kach hayu simonov, and this is this different signs, right? Now, what has he not said?
He says Mace. He says, first thing, he says Mace.
Yeah, but what did he not, he didn't say his name. He said, I saw a Jew was with us. He died. He was from Borough Park, right? And he looked like this, exactly like this. And this was certain simonim, etc., etc. And everybody knows, that's Schwartz. That's for sure, it's Schwartz. I mean, you know, he had a limp. You know, he limped on the left side. He had one false eye, this and that. You know, that's Chaim Yankel Schwartz. No, but he doesn't know it's Chaim Yankel Schwartz. But he just has given us everything to know. So, Ein Omer, we don't say that he's made a mistake. We don't say Ba'omer Adas, it's just an estimation that it's Ploni who, and that it's so-and-so, and we have to wait. Atshiyod Ha'eid, who Ploni V'yaskir Shmo V'Shem Yiro. We don't say we have to wait for another witness to come and say it was Chaim Yankel Schwartz from Muncie or Borough Park. We don't have to wait for that. He's believed. It's enough. The guy has told us more than enough information. Now, obviously, if we can recognize from what he's saying, clearly to know who it is, it's got to be very clear. There was no doubt in our minds this is the only guy it could be. Aval imamar, but what if the guy says, Echad yotza imanu meir plonis v'meis, somebody came from us, went out with us from a certain city and died, and he doesn't mention his name at all. And so then,
Mechapsim. He doesn't mention his character, his shape.
Doesn't mention a lot of things.
Anything.
Right? Mm-hmm. So Mechapsim, also, here we look in that city. Imlo Yotzim Yishom Elohu. If that's the only guy that left the city, Tinasa Yishim's wife came here. In other words, the guy says, I'll just say one thing. We picked up a guy from the city. He went with us to go. And I really don't know a lot. I only know one thing. He was from this location. That's all I know. And I'm telling you, he's dead. Okay, now if we do a search, you know, it's a small city, and we know, hey, you know, Chaim Yankel's not here. And as a matter of fact, he's been missing for the last couple of weeks.
Oh no!
That is enough information for us to believe that he is the person who died.
They would obviously at that point compare notes. Does it look like this? Does it look like that?
The guy doesn't say anything. He doesn't know.
He doesn't say anything.
A guy left and died. He doesn't say he's a bus driver. He's the bus driver. He stopped at the Muncie stop.
Yeah.
One Jew came in, says, what did he look like? Listen, as far as I'm concerned, mister, every Jew looks the same. He had a black jacket and glasses and a beard.
Go ahead. No, he had a white shirt.
And a white shirt. That narrowed it down to everybody. Okay? Okay, so now, and it has to be one Jew except missing. Who's missing? So that fits in. Chafres. Matsu, how about now? Let's all hold it. Normally, can testimony be given in a court of law by handwritten testimony? Are affidavits legal for Jewish testimony courts? No. The Torah says it has to be from the mouth. Testimony from the mouth is the only acceptable form of testimony. How about for these cases, to let a woman get remarried, how about written testimony? Will that help? Matsu kasav shtar, let's say it's written with a shtar. And let's add that the shtar is signed. It's not signed. It's not worth anything. There's two witnesses signed the document. And what did the document say? Mace ish ploni ben ploni, so-and-so, the son of so-and-so died. Oh, nerag ploni ben ploni, or so-and-so, and so-and-so was murdered. V'nodesh is exiles, we know it's Jewish handwriting. How do you know? It gets written in Hebrew. Whatever. We know it's Jewish handwriting, as opposed to goyish handwriting. Right? Harezet tinaso ishto, his wife can get married with him, even though normally this is not admissible evidence, but again, this unique situation allows this to be accepted.
Is it not usually admissible because you can't cross-examine it? Is that part of the problem?
That's part of it, but the Torah says it has to be by the mouth of two witnesses.
Yeah.
So two witnesses has to have a mouth. Now obviously one of the things is you have to cross-examine them, but we have to have the guy in front of us. We don't accept written testimony. Now, what if we have, remember we had a case like this earlier. Remember we talked about a guy who's mute and wants to divorce his wife. How can he divorce his wife? He can never say, I'm giving you the get. So what do? We go to the guy, Chaim Yankel, do you want to divorce your wife? Yeah. Want us to write the get for you? Okay, now, how do we know that the guy understands us? So remember we give him a little test? We give him a few questions, some that require a yes. Is it a sunny day today? Do you love your wife? Whatever. Answers that you know are going to be yes
is there
and no.
Any elephants in your house?
Right. You know, yes and no's to make sure that the guy is sound mind. He can't talk. We don't know if he has sound mind. We ask him a few questions, check out if he's got sound mind. Okay. So that's when a guy wants to divorce a wife. Somebody over here, we use this guy as a witness. You know, ask everybody in the city, do you know what happens to Chaim Young? Did he die? So now this guy goes, says, what about, do you have something to testify to the guys? Says about Chaim Young. What about him? Did he die? So now, can you use that testimony? That's not testimony. Can you use that to prove that he's dead? Somebody who could no longer talk. And we checked him out to know of his mental capacities. As we learned earlier in this halachas of Hilchas Gittin, when we find that he is a smart fellow, and more than that, the cost of Shemay's point, now he could write for us. So-and-so, the son of so-and-so died. We can rely on his handwriting and they can get married. Now, one other thing. Now, new point. You know, same halacha, but new point. Now, this Shelley is going to answer the question that was bothering you yesterday. Okay, remember what was bothering you? When the guy said, I just know the guy told me Chaim Yankel died. Well, what about this? What about that? What about this? The other guy said, well, I saw Chaim Yankel die. Well, then we're ready. What if we ask him a little more?
Yeah, we have to ask him more. He gets scrutinized. The other guy, his hearsay, Gesinnte Hayt, he's dead, go get married. Here, the guy actually comes and says,
anyway,
oh, did you do this? Did that? Okay,
but even then, we don't scrutinize too much. So here's a golden rule he says. Again, you see the uniqueness of this that goes, normally would never do this in a court of law. Normally, there's something called Drisha and Chakira, which are two different words of saying you're investigating the witnesses very well. Bedikas is when you're checking them to make sure their words are truthful. You know, you'll ask them a couple times, see if they don't conflict what they said the first time to the second time. The Chakiras are you ask more detailed questions. The date, the place, what time, etc., etc. So normally, there's a whole set in the Masechta Sanhedrin, they give you a whole set of a full repertoire of questions, the full gamut. So over here, we don't do this. He says, "Vein both gimede isha badrisha v'chakira." We don't give the same thorough examinations that we normally do. Sh'amru chachamim badaver lahachmer, because the rabbis, you know, didn't say this to be strict, elala hakel, but rather to be lenient, mishumataras aguna, to allow an aguna, a chained woman, to allow to get out. In other words, a guy who is going to be strict in here is not doing a good thing.
He's not doing a favor.
In other words, we're trying to get this woman off the hook. So we're normally in normal cases, when do we normally go to court? We're going to court to, let's say, a guy should get killed for being Michal Shabbos, let's say. Two witnesses comes with Michal Shabbos.
Financial issues.
We're not going to kill a guy that easily. We're going to ask guys a million questions before we're going to kill a guy, because that's serious. Two guys are fighting in a court case. You want my money, you want my money. So, you know, for me to give money from you to him or you to him, you know, we better be absolutely certain. Here, the whole concept here is we're trying to give this woman a break. You see we're giving a break. Only one witness is acceptable. Here's a witness acceptable. So, ready being easy, we don't give a thorough. Now, we do have to ask some questions. The normal question is a thorough grilling, like mamish a grilling.
Well
like
done.
Third
well
degree, done. Like a million questions. They ask him again and another time. They're trying to trip him up and this and that and back and forth. And earlier yesterday, if the guy just said, I saw him die, they have to ask him some routine questions. It? Now, hold on. There is one other thing. The commentary say, this is so, except if the rabbis are suspicious for collusion. Then, if they think for some reason the rabbis, you know, something doesn't sound right, something suspicious there, then you go the full blast.
The
you know, you see the wife happens to have given this guy a lot of money yesterday, and just so happens this guy is coming to testify in court. Well, you might be a little suspicious, then you have to give the full. But normally, just a guy comes in and just happens to be one witness. We don't throw the book at him with all the questions.
Yes. The question I was going to ask that Sam knew I was going to ask is, isn't it a very serious concern that if you don't question well and the husband shows up, then she...
No, because again, we don't... Well, you know what? Let's leave it for Chavtes. He'll answer your question. He's really... that is the question of Chavtes. So don't ask, and you don't make this hard in your eyes. Look what the rabbis are doing. They're permitting an erva, that's one of the most strictest averos, betis isha, that a woman can testify, or evid, or a servant, or a ship, or a maid, or goy mesich, or vituma, or goy who happens to mention it, beit and v'eid, and hearsay witness will be accepted from written document below, without checking an akamash, as we explained.
It's worse than someone owing someone else.
So this is a serious avera. The answer is, so he kibid a Torah al ha'ada shnei edim ushar mishvei edus. The only time the Torah is so particular for witnesses and this and clarification this is for something that you normally could not clarify on your own. Only with witnesses. For example, let's say this guy killed another guy. Let's think, if there was no testimony, what would happen to this guy? He would be alive. Right? Let's say one guy killed another guy. There's no witnesses. We don't know anything. So why would we go to this guy and say, you know, we're going to kill you?
Okay.
Why? These witnesses are bringing us information that was totally not, we didn't know about. So when we, something we totally didn't know about, right? And now the guy says this, right? That's what he says. This guy loaned this guy. Where this is the new information for us, and we're never going to be able to clarify unless we have this information. Of all, in other words, we'll never know. How are we ever going to know this guy killed the guy? And if we don't do anything, so the witnesses are determining reality for us 100%. Of all, dover she'ef shalom adol buryo, but something else where it could really eventually be told clearly. Shalom yipayet hazeh, without this witness. Meaning to say, what if the husband walks in one day? Mm. All the other cases, when I say Chaim Yankel killed Shmero, so guess what? If we believe these guys and go Chaim Yankel, there's no way we're going to be able to know if we made a mistake. Right. So we better be awfully sure about these witnesses. But the case where a husband dies, guess what? We don't have to be so careful because the guy's not going to lie so easily because it's a big risk going on because you could be totally refuted if this guy walks into court.
Oh boy.
This is different than anything else. Any other type of curse, you owe him $100. You know, we're never going to know the truth. The only way to know the truth is from the witnesses. And the witnesses are creating the complete truth. We have to be very clear what they're saying, and if they lied or what, you know, we're not going to, next week, you're not going to be able to disprove them because it's an action. We don't know what happened. Did he borrow $100? Did he not borrow $100? It's never going to be totally revealed. But here's the question: did the husband die or not? Well, the guy says he died. Well, how will we ever know the truth? Yeah, guess one day the guy will walk in on us. Then this is a testimony that can ultimately be totally refuted. It doesn't matter. So we're saying, something that can be clarified without them. When the witness knows, no one will be able to disprove me. I say you owe $100. No one's going to be able to prove. Even another two witnesses say, what is that going to mean? They're just arguing with me. I say, Chaim Yankel killed Shmero. So what are you going to do to me? Nothing. And even if we're going to, two witnesses are going to say, no, he didn't kill him. I have nothing to be afraid of. So witness always, we have to be worried they might lie. And in other cases, yeah, they can never be caught. Never. In any case, can you really be proven a liar? So you have to give them every question. When a guy says a man died, you know what, man? If you're lying, eventually the truth will come out. There's only one way you could be sure of it. Either you saw him or you killed him. That's the only way you can be sure of it. But if you really don't know, it's, oh, I feel so bad for this woman. You know, I think I saw a guy die. You know, I'll say he died. Well, now, you know, you better be careful because if this guy walks in, that's going to say, we know you're the biggest liar in the world, Shane Kamohu. And that, when a guy knows that another guy can walk in and prove him to be a bald-faced liar, the guy can't escape from this. He made it a reference. He's not telling the truth. So he says, saying this guy died. So in that case, so the Torah was not particular. Here it is. She said, it's very far to assume. Guy would totally lie. Remember, a guy who's saying a guy died, and he didn't, he's really lying. You have to remember, it's not a small little thing. Well, I think the best is going to ask him a few questions. You can say, yeah, he died. You said he died. Yeah, I saw him. Well, just describe what happened. Well, you know.
You could say someone told me that.
That's different. That's different. But in general, okay.
Sure does.
But still, you're right. But for other cases, one witness, and a lot of other cases, a woman, all these people. So no one's going to say something if they know it's a lie. They're not, we assume in those days people don't just
lie. But if it's a Gentile.
Only Mesiach Levi Tumo. Only if he happens to say it in the bar and overhear him. Then we assume he's saying the truth.
Matter of fact, saying it.
Lefikach, therefore, hey, Kelu, Chacham, and Rezeh, the rabbis were lenient here. Ve'minu bo, Eidecha, Mepi, Shivcha, Minaksavu, Lodrisha, Chakira, Kidei, Shalot, Tisharav, Nos, Shishol, Agunos. We want to do this so that women should not remain anchored. Now, you might say, so why, so the, my footnote says, so you might say, well, why did the rabbis, you know, want to be so lenient here, whereas many, many other places where they're very strict? Usually, you know, we go with certain chazakas and say something's usher, and we don't believe one witness, even if something can be revealed later. Let's say, for example, a piece of meat is before us, and one witness says it's fat, and one guy says it's a treif, right? So, you know, we don't believe the guy, because ultimately, you know, certain things could be proven also, but we don't give belief. The answer is this is a special case. It's aguna. A woman to never be married to a husband the rest of her life, the Torah has compassion on that. So therefore, there is compassion. And since it's something, if he lies, most likely he can be disproved. So that's why we'll believe in that situation. That's why, although normally we want to be very absolutely sure about the truth, here, this is a very unique case where the truth will come out even with the witness can't do anything to stop it. And especially so because it's for an aguna, double barrel reason, we are leaning in these areas. Exactly 30 minutes on the button.